يا محمد صلوات
الله
وسلام على محمد محمد.
السلام عليكم. السلام عليكم. السلام. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
First, I would like to offer my condolences on the occasion of the demise anniversary of Lady Khadija alayha salam. And I was hoping to speak about certain aspects in relation to marriage and women, but because of the discussions of the previous night, it's extended a bit, but inshallah I will speak about it either tomorrow or the day after. Also, I would like to offer my condolences to the families of those martyred in Kuwait today. And Muslims have to know that their silence when oppression is happening in the world and they remain silent in relation to that oppression will come to them eventually. The key is one has to always voice one's opposition to these forms of oppressions. Otherwise, sooner or later, one will be drowned in it themselves. Okay, continuing with discussions that we were having for the last few nights. There were some questions that people had emailed me with, and I don't want to go through them one by one, but just in note form, I just want to mention a few things. These discussions we've been having in relation to evolution and the question of Adam and Eve, was there one, more than one? And irrespective of if there was one or more than one, were they given birth to by apes or Neanderthals, or were they created from Earth? All this, it has no negative bearing on Tawheed, because all this is manifesting Tawheed, or in other words, it's manifesting existence, and Allah is pure existence. Nothing can go against existence. Nothing is existence free. To say one understanding goes against Tawheed, no, there's no need to say that. This has no bearing on Tawheed, whichever interpretation one takes. Another point is, yes, if we don't use any Quranic references and we want to look at it purely rationally, without any reference to verses of the Quran, yes, it's okay, it's possible, it's rationally possible. Or in other words, it's not rationally impossible for an ape or a Neanderthal to give birth to a human being. It's not impossible. We don't have to, no one can make that claim. It is possible. But it's a Quranic discussion we're having, and we want to see, according to the Quran, which position was favored more. Another point was, although we did mention this, that Nabi Adam alayhi salam had no parents. And that was a key point here. Because if you're given birth to by an ape or a Neanderthal, you have parents. Nabi Adam alayhi salam had no parents. And that's why, because of this point, we don't accept, with the limited understanding we have today of the Quran, it doesn't seem that evolution, the way the West are portraying it in the media and putting it on a wide scale, as if everyone has to understand, and whoever doesn't understand, they're a bit abnormal. We don't know, it doesn't fit with the Quran's logic. right now, but if it was proven scientifically 100%, we have no problem in accepting it. The question of who is the mother, who is the father, these are very important discussions. And inshallah we'll come to it. We have this discussion in fiqh, but also in other areas, it has a lot of implications. Who is the mother? Is it the owner of the egg, or is it the owner of the womb? Naturally, everyone goes to their manager, but there's some important implications to this question. Also in relation to who is the father. Is it only the person who is the owner of the sperm? Or is it no, it has to be accompanied with copulation, the act itself. And this has implications in IVF and so on and so forth. And Ayatollah Sistan has a very incredible fatwa here, which deserves a lot of attention. Another person asked that modern man, the history is stems back to 120 years ago in Africa. How does that fit in with Adam and Eve? The term modern is incorrect here. You got it, the modern man. Because modernity is something very recent. But we know what he means. But yes, it doesn't matter if it was proven that 120,000 years ago there were people who were living, which of course there were. That doesn't mean before or after that there were no people. We can still, there were always people, since pre-eternity. Just because they pinpointed a certain time at a certain place, that's okay, it doesn't go against what we've been saying. So let's assume that if those historical reports that say Nabi Adam, as we know, existed 10,000 years ago, that doesn't go against that 120,000, there were other people, and before that there were other people. There's no contradiction here. And they ask that these subhumanoids that exist, like the Neanderthals, people or species of a lower degree, at least intellectually, than Homo sapiens humans today, why do they exist? Doesn't their progression indicate or prove evolution? That was the question. Well, no. There's no problem in subhumanoids existing. And they give a few other names, I don't remember the names. One was Neanderthal, they give another classes of names. It's, all these can exist. And the levels of rationality can differ. There's maybe a range of it. But you have to prove that humans evolved from them. And they gave birth to humans. This has to be proven. Just because of the genetic continuity, it doesn't prove that they evolved from this species. Otherwise, there may be genetic continuity between a plant and a pig. But we have the question is, did this evolve from that? And that has to be proven. But if it is proven in the future, we have no problem. We'll accept it. Because aql is a tool in Islam. It's one of the tools, one of the traditions, the verses. We call that naql, the texts. And also another tool of the Sharia is aql. And Allah gave us this tool. And it's a hujjat, it's a very strong hujjat, especially if it's substantiated. Okay, here are just a few questions that people have asked. Today's question, inshallah, is how did the third generation arise? So we have Adam and Eve. And then we have their children, who would be the second generation. How did the third generation, the grandchildren of Adam and Eve, so to speak, how did they arise? Now this is a question that all religions have to answer. Something that's not only specific to Islam, all Sharias, all religions, those who believe in the halal and the haram, they have to pose this question and answer it in some way or form. This is not strictly an Islamic issue. All religions should have an answer to this question. Now, in relation to Adam and Eve and their grandchildren, the third generation, and how they arose, we want to approach this subject tonight, inshallah, the time we have, and inshallah, we should be able to finish it. Before we start and we go through the different theories that exist, just one preliminary point I want to mention, and that's in relation to the fitra. Fitra being that immaterial, innate nature upon which the soul is created. We discussed it a few days ago. Fitrat Allah allati fatara an-nasa alayha. This fitra that Nas people were created. People, their creation, that which is essential to people is their soul. That soul was created based on alayha, that fitra. And that tradition which says, ma min mawludin illa yuladu ala al-fitra fa abawahu yuhawwidanihi wa yunassiranihi wa yumajjisani, that all newborn are born based on the fitra. They come to existence based on the fitra. It's their parents who make them Jew, Christian, or Zoroastrian. There, the fitra is used in opposition to three religions, meaning that fitra in essence is true Islam, meaning that the fitra in essence is deen. And in the Quran, inna deena inna Allahil Islam. So fitra is the deen, it's Islam. And in that tradition, the fitra is used in opposition to distorted forms of Islam. And that true Islam, that Tawheed, the creation of the soul was based on that. We went through this a few days ago. I don't want to repeat everything again. Now, from this fitra, therefore, emanates all the general principles of aqa'id, all the general principles of akhlaq, and all the general principles of ahkam. So doctrine, ethics, and rulings, Islamic rulings, legal rulings, all these, the general principles of all these emanate from that true tawheed, that fitra. It's all there. Now, all prophets came and they confirmed that which was sent by previous prophets. What did they confirm? It was these general points that emanate from the fitra. This was confirmed. So in aqaid, akhlaq, ahkam, or the general principles, that was always confirmed. So a prophet would come, give the rulings, the doctrine, the akhlaq, then a succeeding prophet would come and confirm that which preceded him in the general and universal principles that emanate from Tawheed, that emanate from the fitra. In chapter 5, verse 46, in relation to the Injil, the New Testament, the Quran writes, فِيهِ هُدًى وَنُورًا. There's guidance in it, there's light in it, in the Injil. مُصَدَّقًا لِمَا بَيْنَ يَدَيْ مِنَ التَّوْرَةِ. And here, Nabi Isa, he's confirming that which preceded it, preceded the Injil, the New Testament. What preceded it? The Torah, Nabi Musa's book. And Nabi Isa came and confirmed that which preceded it. Because the fitra, according to the chapter of the Quran, la tabdila, la tabdila li khalqillah, if I'm not mistaken. There's no, in relation to the fitra, the creation of the fitra, there's no change in relation to it. There's one fitra. It doesn't change. It can be veiled or unveiled. It can be actualized or not actualized. But the fitra is one. Its essence is one. Because Tawheed is one. And that's why religion can only be one. Remember Allah Metabotabois, quote that Tawheed is Abul Adiyan, the father of all religions. But its children, some are Sadiha, some are Tadiha. Some are righteous, some are not. But all emanates from Tawheed. Religion is one, it's Tawheed. So yes, Nabi Isa would confirm that which preceded him from the Torah. In relation to our Holy Messenger, chapter 5, verse 48, وَأَنْزَلْنَا, we sent down, إِلَيْكَ, to you, to Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, الْكِتَابَ بِالْهَا, the book was sent with the truth, مُصَدِّقًا لِمَا بَيْنَ يَدَيْهِ, confirming that which preceded it. What was confirmed? The fitrah, the tawheed, that one deen, not any distorted form, and they were the general principles which emanate from tawheed. General principles in aqa'id, doctrine, akhlaq, legal rulings, and other things. Okay. Then we see that sometimes there are not general universal principles, but subsidiary, secondary matters which change from Sharia to Sharia, from prophet to prophet. At the end of the day, they are aspects of deen, but we do see a change according to the Holy Quran. For example, X action is halal according to one Sharia. When the succeeding Sharia arises, that X action which was halal becomes haram. Or vice versa, X action was haram in a Sharia. When the succeeding Sharia comes, or the succeeding Prophet comes, or Rasul comes, it makes it halal. It abrogates that which existed in before. It doesn't confirm that which it was preceded with. Now this deserves attention now. There's something has to be answered. And all this has implications to our main discussion tonight. That's why it's an important introduction before we get to the main point tonight. So here, مُصَدِّقًا لِمَا بَيْنَ يَدَيْهِ, when we see these differences in actions, it doesn't happen in aqa'id, but in actions it does happen, in legal rulings. Here, saying that this Prophet came confirming that which preceded it, that doesn't qualify anymore. It does qualify in relation to aqa'id, akhlaq, and the general legal rulings, but in some legal rulings it doesn't qualify. One example, chapter 4, verse 160, فَبِذُلْمِنْ مِنَ الَّذِينَ هَادُوا, as a result of the oppression executed by the Jews, حَرَّمْنَا عَلَيْهِمْ تَيَّبَاتٍ أُحِلَّتْ لَهُمْ, we prohibited for them that which we had made halal for them. وَبِسَدِّهِمْ عَنْ سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ كَثِيرًا, that was because of the oppressions they did. Another reason was because they were hindering people from Allah's way. Because of this, things that were halal was made haram. See, they were abrogated. The dilemma being, if religion is one and all emanate from Tawheed, why this abrogation? Why has something suddenly changed? Religion is supposed to be one religion. And this is very clearly seen in chapter 3, verse 50, in relation to Nabi Isa. In the beginning of the verse, it's about وَمُصَدِّقًا لِمَا بَيْنَ يَدَيْهِ, Nabi Isa saying that I'm confirming that which preceded me, مِنَ التَّوْرَاتِ. The Torah came with its aqa'id, with its akhlaq, with its ahkam, rulings, and I'm coming confirming that which was in the Torah. That which was in the Torah, that which was in the Old Testament. But then he adds, وَلِأُحِلَّ لَكُمْ بَعْذَ الَّذِي حُرِّمَ عَلَيْكُمْ, but some of those things that were made haram for you, I've come and made halal for you. So this is a clear abrogation here. It was haram for them, certain things. The New Testament comes, a new Rasul comes. Say, what I'm saying is in conformity with what that which preceded me, okay? But there are some changes made. That which is in conformity is the fitra, tawheed, and the general principles of aqaid, ahkam, which emanate from it. But there are differences also. Why are there differences? This has to be explained a bit. How can aspects of deen, after all, alter? This has to be answered. In response to this question, when we look at insan and man, there are two dimensions you have to bear in mind. One is the fitri dimension, and that's the soul, which is immaterial, and the soul was created based on the fitra, based on true tawheed, based on the deen, true religion, which is the general principles and aqaid and so on and so forth. Yes, so that doesn't change. That aspect of the soul does not change. Now you may not actualize the fitra that you were created, your creation was based upon. You may not lead to its fruition. It may be actualized, it may not be. It may be veiled, it may be unveiled. But the fitra is one. Whether you actualize it within yourself and wake it up or not, that's another issue. But the fitra is one within you. That has no change. It's immaterial after all. That knows of no change. That's a given. Angels have a fitra too, and they never change. From beginning to end, in their functions, they never change. It's always a uniform way of action. Within some, though, we have a bodily dimension too. This bodily dimension is time and place and circumstance dependent. The fitra isn't, the soul isn't. It's not dependent on time, place, circumstances. It's an immaterial reality, it is. The body though, the physical dimension of the human, that is susceptible to changes in time, place, and circumstances. So if a change in certain parameters arise, this body, and after all, we act through this physical body. The soul grows and elevates as a result of its dependency on its physical dimension. If we couldn't act, the soul couldn't grow. Now, this body which does the acting, although it's the soul which is acting, but it's doing it through a physical body. But this physical body is dependent upon and susceptible to changes in the environment. If that happens, that very same fitra, which is unchangeable, in order for one to actualize it, there may require some changes in actions because of the change in time, place, and circumstances. This is just an analogy I'm giving. I was thinking of giving an analogy. This was the best that came to my mind. I'm sure you can think of better ones. Just thinking, I don't want you to get drowned in the theoretical aspect of it. That was what I just explained. Imagine that you have 20, let's say 200 gallons of water is given to you, and that's a constant. Given to you every day for your needs. So let's say every day 200 gallons. That 200 is a constant, and it's there for your needs. And then you move location, and you go somewhere which is much colder, than where you used to be. Here, the 200 gallons remains the same. But before, in the hotter place, with the 200 gallons, when the ruling was have a shower every day, now because of a change in your environment, the 200 remains. But the ruling changes is, no, you need to have a shower every alternative day. The constant remains, but as a result of that change of environment, that constant has to be manifested or actualized in another manner. It's a much colder environment now. That's what we mean. That can change. Those legal rulings, they can change. But it's out of maslahat. It's out of the best interest of the human. But the constant is always the constant. That doesn't change. Subsidiary particular matters of actions, yes, they can change. And that changes because of maslahat. Maslahat being in the best interest of the people. Subsidiary aspects of akhlaq may change. But it's out of maslahat, for the best interest of the people, either for their survival or for other reasons. Okay, that was the introduction. Now, since it's Friday, if I can speak 10 minutes extra with your permission. So how did the third generation arise? Let's go through the different theories one by one and then we'll evaluate them at the same time. That which Allama Tabatabai ends with and is his final position is that the children of Adam and Eve, they married one another. What we call today incest, which is haram. So they married one another. If you say, well, how could that be? How could they marry? It's haram. Allama says that not all the muharramat are issued as muharramat from the beginning. Not even wajibat are issued as wajibat from the beginning. Because some people say there was no Sharia then, so it's okay if we give the green light to incest. No, maybe there was no Sharia, but Adam alayhi salam was insanul kamil. He had responsibility towards his children. He had responsibility. He had to guide them. It doesn't matter if there's no Sharia, but he has this responsibility and he has this duty to guide his children. But the issue is, are all the haram things issued from the beginning, from the time of Adam's children, were they issued from the very beginning, or no, were they issued gradually? The same happens with the wajibat. Did everything become wajib, and were they issued as a wajibat from the very beginning? Or were even the wajibat, they were issued over time? Was fasting wajib from the very beginning of the mission of the Holy Messenger? Or what did it become wajib later? The answer is later. Zakat, later. Jihad, khums, all these came later. And even the muharramat, were they issued as muharramat, as haram things from the beginning? Or were they issued later, for whatever reason? Alcohol is haram, drinking it. Was that haram issued from the very beginning, even with our Holy Prophet, with Islam? The fact that alcohol is haram to drink, was this issued from the beginning of the mission, or was it issued later? The answer is it was issued later. Women were able to marry, Muslim women were able to marry non-Muslim men in the beginning. But non-Muslim women marrying non-Muslim men is haram. Was this haram issued from the very beginning, or did it come later? All these coming laters is because of a maslahat which existed. But we have this in our religions, previous religions, our religion in Islam, with a lot of examples. There's no insistence that all the muharramat and all the wajibat were issued from the beginning for the people. True, for Insan al-Kamil, for the perfect man, for the Ma'soom, since they know what is haram, all the harams, they know what is wajib, they would act on a par with the muharramat and the wajibat themselves. So the Prophet would pray before prayers became wajib. The Prophet would do all the wajibat before the wajibat would become wajib for the people, but the Prophet would do it. But here the question of incest, which is now the dilemma, no one is saying Nabi Adam did incest. The question is in relation to the second generation. Did they commit incest or not? Incest is haram, okay, no problem. But was this haram issue from the beginning or not? Alam al-Tawatawa says no, it wasn't issued from the beginning. And Nabi Adam gave the green light. He wouldn't do it himself, but he gave the green light. The haram wasn't issued out of maslahat, the best interest of the people. Like alcohol wasn't deemed haram from the beginning. Like certain aspects of marriage and many other things out of maslahat. What was the maslahat here? Well, the human population had to continue. Then someone may say, look, this act of incest, intrinsically, it's an act of vice. It's something bad. How can he come and give the green light to it? And this is a very important discussion, which maybe you've all heard in relation to the Mu'tazilites and the Ash'arites. Do actions intrinsically have value? They're intrinsically good or bad? Because they're intrinsically good, Allah says, do this. If it's intrinsically bad, Allah says, don't do this, as the Mu'tazilites believe. Or are they free from this intrinsic value? This is a discussion between the Mu'tazilites and the Ash'arites. And many Shia theologians have become drowned in this discussion. Allah Ta'ala has a theory here. He doesn't believe that actions have intrinsic value themselves. And also Ayatollah Hassan Zadeh in his book Tawbah, he says this discussion of intrinsic things has been diverted from the main discussion it used to be. Otherwise, the Ash'arites also believe some actions are good per se. Who can deny that? It's become very simplistic. It's evolved into a very simplistic issue. But the original discussion was something else. I don't want to get into that now. Ayatollah Hassan Zadeh in his book called Tawbah, he discusses this. Allama Tabatabai too doesn't accept this notion. And then he enters a discussion called the I'tibarat, which now is not the time to open that discussion now. But he says this, the inner nature of man has certain requests. The inner nature, the tabi'ah of man has certain needs for it to reach its potential. That which enables that potential to arise, the person comes and say, assigns that action as good, or the legislator assigns it as wajib, because it's on the par with one's tabi'ah, not because there's intrinsic value in it. And things which are detrimental to one's tabi'ah, one's nature, in reaching one's potential, which is reaching Allah, we assign that arbitrarily, conventionally, as something bad. Not that it has intrinsic bad in it. We call these things i'tibarat, they're mental constructs that we make. But it's based on that inner nature of ours and its needs. It's based on something real. But i'tibarat need not be something real themselves. By real, I mean in the real world, external world. They're mental constructs. But I don't want to enter that discussion right now. So, when you say this act is vicious per se, Allah says, no, it doesn't have to be vicious per se. And we don't see it as vicious per se. But we see that if this was to continue in society, it would destroy society's chastity. That's why it becomes haram. But don't see it as intrinsic madness in it. It's because of its consequences, then we say it's haram. Therefore, for one generation, if it were to happen, it's unproblematic. But then it became haram out of maslahat, out of the best interest for the people and their salvation, then it became haram, but it's okay. There's nothing that insists or makes us obliged to say all the muharramat, all the wajibat were issued from the very beginning. Okay, so that is one understanding. One other possible argument against this is that, and we have a tradition on this too, but this tradition, even if there was no tradition on this, it's an aqli notion, and that is animals don't commit incest. In the tradition, and Ibn Sina also has mentioned this, he says that once a horse was forced to mate with another horse, and that other horse was the first horse's sister, but they did it in the dark, so the horse wouldn't realize. After the mating process, the horse realized that it was his sister. The horse kept on hitting himself to the wall until it died. This notion, if it becomes substantiated, you know, scientifically, that no animals, by their very nature, don't commit incest, this would be a strong argument against this position, because it's an ugly argument now. It's something fitly. Whereas Allama doesn't regard it as something fitri. He enters the discussion on i'tibarat. Unless, you know, there are many discussions here. I mean, if I want to enter this very small point, we would need other preliminary points I need to mention, which I don't mind entering those discussions. It's just I don't want to bore you, because this discussion has continued for some time now. Some people have said, okay, can we move on to the next discussion? I know people have become a bit tired with these discussions, but these are very important things we have to understand. Yes, if you don't encounter people, if you don't guide people, if you don't face questions from your classmates, your workmates, and so on and so forth, yet these things aren't of much value for you. But when it comes to educating yourself, your children, your classmates, workplace, and so on and so forth, these questions are going to be asked. Either you want to answer them or not. But if you want to answer them, I would advise you not to answer. Don't enter this area. Because in 99% of the cases, you'll make a mess out of it. And then you'll be responsible. But if you want to enter this discussion, you have to learn. You have to learn these things. Another theory is that, and we have all kinds of traditions here. And when we have all kinds of traditions, it's very difficult to come to a conclusion. We have to stick with the zahir of the Qur'an. And actually, Allama favors this. With all these future theories, he says, look, these are all traditions. And it goes against the apparent prima facie meaning of the Qur'an. But the Qur'an has to be taken as the main criterion. If these other theories go against the logic of the Qur'an, we can't accept it. And that's why he accepts his theory. And that theory is on a par with the Qur'an, at least in the Zahir of the Qur'an. It's on a par with the Zahir of chapter 4, verse 1. We've discussed that at length. But another is that Huris, now Hur is a plural. It's a plural of Hura, which is a female, and a plural of Ahwar, which is male. Some people think Huris are only female. Hur, the word itself, is a plural of Hura, which is a female Huri, and Ahwar, which is a male Huri. So everyone will have Huris in the hereafter. There's no problem there, don't worry. But here, one theory, and we have traditions on it, that Huris were created for Adam's daughters, and Huris were created for Adam's sons. They mated, they produced. One problem with that is, who is our immaterial beings? Entities of the hereafter, they're immaterial. How is something immaterial going to mate with something material? That's one problem. But that problem can be solved. And this also requires a lengthy discussion. We can have it if you want. That some people, even after death, if their soul is a strong soul, and they were very spiritual in this world, they can generate physical copies of themselves, more than one even, whilst maintaining their identity. We have this, they're called the Abadal. They can be living, they cannot be living. It's philosophically possible too. But if I were to explain the philosophy, I would have to go through maybe one lecture at least. So that's something to bear in mind. If you're interested in it, we can go through that. So who is two? They're heavenly entities, but they can generate physical copies of themselves. And then with that, if they do that, then they can mate and so on and so forth. But the problem is, since they're huris by essence, the Quran said in chapter 4, verse 1, خَلَقَكُمْ مِنْ نَفْسٍ وَاحِدَةٍ. Allah created you, all humans, from a single substance. Here, if we bring this huri dimension into it, it would be خَلَقَكُمْ مِنْ نَفْسَيْنِ, two different substances. Because at the end, they're huris, their essence is different. Whereas in the Quran says, خَلَقَكُمْ مِنْ نَفْسٍ وَاحِدَةٍ, you were created from a single substance. So that would go against the logic of the Quran. It would go against this part of the Quran. Because it's not of the same substance. One is earthly, one is heavenly. Another theory is that Adam's children mated with jinns. Now, with jinns, we don't have the same problem we have with the huris, because jinns are physical. But the other problem still exists, that they're of a different nature, different substance to humans. The Quran says, خَلَقَكُمْ مِنْ نَفْسٍ وَاحِدَةٍ, a single substance. And Adam's mate was from the same substance, and all people are from the same substance. نَفْس here, نَفْسُ شَيْءٍ حَقِيقَتُهُ ذَاتُهُ, the nafs of any given thing, it's a substance, it's a thought, it's essence, it's truth. Here the truth of the jinn is something different to the truth of humans. It's not on a par here. So with the jinns too, there are traditions, but we can't accept them, it's difficult. Now some people have come, they said, look, they wanted to accept the huri theory and say the prophets were results of the marriages between human and huris. Everyone else was a product of brothers and sisters marrying. But I mean, it's a very wild theory, this. It's something purely on paper, purely imaginary. At the end of the day, we need some backing. When there's no backing in the traditions and in the verse of the Quran, it's very difficult to accept. You can say it's rationally possible. But saying rationally it's something is not rationally impossible, it's only step one. It doesn't really conclude the actual what happened. Another theory is that other humans were created. Maybe not other Adams and Eve, as we have discussed before, but when there were children of Adam, then Allah created humans. In the same way He created Adam and Eve, He created another male and female for them to mate. Now, there's no mention of that in the Holy Quran, there's no mention of that in the traditions either, but it's still more on a par with the logic of the Quran. But still accepting it's a bit difficult. But it wouldn't, it's still min nafsin wahida. They share the same substance. With that other theory that people, and we went through all the proofs, that they believe there were more than one Adam and Eve, that then their children would intermarry. So in each continent there were more than one Adam and Eve, and their children would marry and they would continue. And they have brought their proofs, we've discussed that before. But here, there's a slight difference here. The difference being that when the second generation arises, then Allah creates a male and female, as He created Adam and Eve, then they marry. That's a theory at least. But with there were more than one Adam and Eve, they brought a lot of justifications. I'm not saying they were right, but there were many proofs. Here we don't really have that. And finally, children of Adam, and we have traditions here too, that children of Adam and Eve married from people of the previous cycle. Because in the traditions, did you mention that there are 12,000 cycles right now? We discussed that, yes, last night. Also, we discussed that there were infinite number of cycles preceding our Adam, our cycle. And then there will be cycles after us. But in the traditions with our cycle, when it speaks of it becoming extinct and another heaven and earth arising, with the previous cycles, there's no mention of them necessarily becoming extinct and then a new heaven and earth arising. If that's the case, it's possible. They don't have to become extinct. It's possible that it remains as the traditions. We have traditions. There's one particular manager who's mentioned this as proof for himself. And it's Ayatollah Makarim Shirazi, a very notable scholar, Mufassir of the Quran. He sides with this position. That, and he uses that tradition and he says that the children of Adam may have married people from the previous cycle. And actually, the traditions mention, gives a name for that cycle. And since they don't have to become extinct, there's no mention of a new heaven and earth, they can remain. It's possible. There's no mention of a new heaven and earth coming. That's why we have fossils of maybe 2 million years ago, 200,000 years ago. Because this the same earth is there. But with our cycle, then there's talk of a new earth arising. And a new cycle of people coming. Now where that is, what that is, that's another discussion. But still, this makes it possible that this tradition bears weight, at least. And then they marry people from the previous cycle. If that's the case, two possible difficulties may arise. When it says خَلَقَكُمْ مِنْ نَفْسٍ وَاحِدًا, did those previous people have the same substance as Adam and Eve and us? It's not clear because that tradition describes the makeup of those people. They had hands, legs and everything, but not necessarily like us. It was called the Nasna cycle. Can you say that Min Nafsin Wahida applies to them too? Most probably, the discussions here, I mean, there is a case for, there is a case against it. But something else, when the Quran says, وَبَثَ مِنْهُمَا رَجَالًا كَثِيرًا وَنِسَاءً, then from you too, Adam and Eve, numerous men and women were produced. Now if those from the previous cycles were involved in the process, you would have to say, وَبَثَ مِنْهُمَا, from you two, وَمِنْ غَيْرَهُمَا, and from other than you two, these numerous men and women came to be. And therefore, this marriage with the previous cycles, it's not at least on a par with the zahir of the verse. And the tradition is, you know, it's not 100% anyway. It's only one tradition, a few traditions. It doesn't lead to our certainty. These traditions can't come and reinterpret the zahir of the Quran. But still, this has to be, you know, looked into more. Okay, so these are five of the main theories which exist. When Allama looks at all these traditions about the holy, the jinn, the previous cycles, and so on and so forth, he says, look, at the end of the day, it's not on a par with the zahir of the verse in the Quran, chapter 4, verse 1. And they're not certainty leading anyway, because they're only solitary reports. In aqa'id, you need to have yaqeen. In actions, solitary reports will suffice. But with yaqeen, just because there are many traditions, it doesn't give yaqeen to you. They have to reach a threshold which leads to your yaqeen, and we don't have that. And so we go back to the Qur'an as the main criteria, and the zahir of the Qur'an. And the zahir of the Qur'an is one Adam and Eve, and these people emitted from that one Adam and Eve. Except for that interpretation, which those scholars who said there was more than one Adam and Eve, and they said that kathir has to be interpreted differently, and the difference between walid and ab, there's some weight there. But all those other theories, it's difficult for it to stand. It's difficult to prove. Okay, I tried to fit it all in. Sorry I went over time, but at least we can continue with a new subject, inshallah, unless there are questions which are emailed to me, which I'll answer tomorrow, inshallah. Wa sallallahu ala wa sallam.